Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Film Sack listeners. I know many of you are sitting around each and every day saying, how can I support my favorite show on the internet? Well, turns out there's a path to greatness. Head on over to patreon.com/frogpants and show your support today.
After 2 years of training, you believe that a $45,000 airplane is there for your amusement?
No, sir, I was just trying to keep my edge, Major.
And when you did the outside loop last week, what did you think that was? Honing your skills? That's not training, Macaulay, that's a stunt. And I personally consider it to be reckless and irresponsible.
Major, how could that be when you're famous for being the first man in the world ever to do it?
Don't get cute with me, son.
They f*** you at the drive-thru, okay? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 394. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Brian. Please, ma'am, don't take my wings, Dunaway.
Give me those wings! I have wings now. Oh, hi! And welcome, volunteer suckers, suckers. This week, you may have made the bad life choice of agreeing to follow us into battle against Michael Bay's three-hour epic love story meets Shoot 'Em Up meets I Need Another Cup of Coffee So I Can Stay Awake Till the End, or at least until one of these stupid childhood friends dies for good so I can go to bed already. Will he? Won't he? Will he? Oh, shut up. I stopped caring 2 hours ago. Anywho, you know who needs a beating? Rafe. Kid that nearly destroys half the crops by messing around his dad's expensive crop duster on the tails of the Great Depression. That deserves a face paddling. In fact, this whole movie deserves a whooping. We need to head down to the hangars and replace the props in a few of those planes with paddles and then line these suckers up and administer some high RPM whoopings. Mm. You want a second dose of that, Affleck? Here, have another. Have all you want. Oh, man. When did I become such an angry old man at 46?
Yeah.
I used to pull for the spirited youth in movies. Now I just want to punch them. I want to head over to Clint Eastwood's house, grab a beer and a bat, march down to Affleck's house and... All right. No more late night movies with coffee for me. I may have a problem. Hey, Affleck. Surprise, Jack!
Real quick, Rafe is never a name I've heard anyone else have.
No.
What about Ralph Fiennes?
Oh, Ralph Fiennes. Is that how it's spelled? I didn't know. I think it's like Ralph then?
It's spelled... No, well, in Pearl Harbor, it's spelled Rafe as in...
His name was F, but actually his name was Ralph, but you know, he kept spelling it wrong. I finally just went with it. Rafe.
That's true. Yeah, he doesn't know how to spell.
Yeah,
he doesn't know how to spell. Let me see your name. Spell it.
Yeah, he's poor. He grew up in the South in the Great Depression. That's fine. There's a stereotype for you. Hey, also with us, Randy, how long can a movie spend in an army hospital with people getting shots in their bums? Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Ryan.
Hi.
Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
You notice I said aloha. We're going to spend over an hour of movie time in Hawaii, and I'll be the closest thing to a Hawaiian you'll be encountering today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's true. I'm back. I'm back. I know you thought I was dead. I know you missed me, but I'm back. Mm. And I've heard some things. Yeah. I've heard that you might have fallen in love with my best friend while you thought I was dead.
Yeah.
Guys, I can't take that. It's hurting me. It's hurting my heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to understand it. Like, I want to understand that you never really loved me because of my learning disability. I've got dyslexia. But look around you. Everyone in sight has learning disabilities. Look,
yes.
I've got a friend over here with a stutter. I work for an Admiral Stannis with some kind of learning disability. Let's listen to his accent. I don't even know what he's doing. I mean, Michael Shannon over here, clearly learning disability. Tom Sizemore is absolutely off the rails. And by the way, my best friend's dad, William Fichtner, is all messed up.
Yeah.
Speaking of my best friend, you're with my best friend, aren't you? You're with my best friend.
Bringing it back around.
Yeah. You know what? You just go be with Matt Damon. I love you, Sarah Silverman.
Aww. Those two are finally together. Mm. Nicely done. Also, and finally with us, excuse me, Brian Hammer Down Ibbot.
Ooh, Hammer Down, Hammer Down. Hammer 10-4, down. Good buddy.
Yep, Hammer Down.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and the House of Representatives, yesterday, October 5th, 2018, a 3.5 hours, which will live in infamy, I sat down to suddenly and deliberately watch the Michael Bay film, Pearl Harbor. I had seen the film before, but I had forgotten the nearly hour and 20 minutes of the setup of the love triangle between Benjamin Affleck, Joshua Hartnett, and Catherine Beckinsale. After that came the bombing. I started with a Long Island iced tea, and out of fear or laziness, moved suddenly and deliberately to Moscow mules, and by the time we actually got to the Pearl Harbor attack, I was well and truly bombed. After the film had concluded, the autoplay feature on the internet website www.netflix.com started to autoplay the sequel, in which the same actors continue the attack on Japan in what is known as the Doolittle Raid. Oh, hold on.
Oh, good.
Oh, I've just been informed that that was indeed not the sequel, but an extra hour-long bit added after the climax of the film, which serves to make the decision process easier for Catherine Beckinsale's character to decide between the two pilots. And I must say, it's good to see Batman and General Zod working together again.
Wow.
Dude.
Summed it up perfectly.
I think you win. That was real good.
Yeah, that was summed up perfectly.
That was real good. Well, all right, the movie is Pearl Harbor, if that wasn't obvious at this point. And we finally done it. It's a 3-hour epic, one might say. I'm not sure the word epic is the appropriate term. I don't know what else you use.
Well, I mean, for good or for better or for worse, it's an epic.
Yeah, it's an epic something.
It's weird. It's from 2001, and at the time, we would have considered this obnoxiously long, blah, blah, blah. We have a word like epic, but now, like, we'll sit down and watch an 11-hour-long movie that is Stranger Things Season 1.
Yeah. Like nothing. No, you're right. You're right. There's something, though, about... I was thinking about... I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just thinking about this. Like, what is the difference between a really long movie and, let's say, 4 hours of a series that I binge?
Choices.
Well, choices, but...
It's called, I can watch one episode, or I can choose to watch all of them.
Well, no, you're actually getting...
There's no break.
You're getting right to it. You're actually getting right to the point of it, which is they have the illusion of breaking it in pieces. It is quite literally broken in pieces, because there's credits and there's intro sequences, and they pad them out as if it was a TV show that aired separately. But it's just an illusion to create the break to make you think it's okay to keep going. And movies don't do that. They used to. They used to have intermissions and stuff like that. They don't do that stuff anymore. So anything too long is like, who would sit for a 3-hour movie? But plenty of people sit for 8 hours of straight television watching. And
it's funny because there's still... feels like there are episodes in Pearl Harbor, right? I mean, you've got the kids are learning to fly and they accidentally fly a plane episode, and then there's the episode where Ben Affleck falls in love and then dies and doesn't really die, but falls in love and dies. And then there's the episode where the gang travels to Pearl Harbor and that place gets bombed.
Yeah.
And then
yeah, no, you're right.
I think the big difference is really, I mean, TV shows that are where you reconsume in large amounts, has this ability to climax at a certain point and come down. It's got hills and valleys. The hills and valleys just seem like so long here. It's like, no, I'm never going to reach it.
No, it's way overdone. I mean, here's my solution to this entire problem. I think this is a sandwich with really moldy bread on both sides, but a pretty good middle bit. I think the attack on Pearl Harbor itself is epic and cool and intense.
But you couldn't have an hour and a half worth of that, right? You had to have something before then.
You got
to
have something before and after that. But I think the before and after that, this is where they made the mistake. It didn't need to be this ridiculous soap opera. All it had to be was, here are some incidental characters that were in and around Pearl Harbor during the attack. And this is what happens when all of their world is upset and everybody is freaking out and everyone's dying and there's this carnage. And then there's some aftermath. There's your two-hour movie.
I feel like it's Michael Bay's way of saying, "Oh, you can do Titanic. I can out Titanic your Titanic."
I'm telling you, I'm looking at my notes, and I have the words: Randall Wallace tried to write Michael Bay's Titanic. This is a naked ripoff of what they thought was a formula, and it's not. It's just you cannot take some big event and add a love triangle to it and have a movie that 16-year-old girls are going to go see like Titanic.
I mean, you can do it, but I think you can do it poorly. And I think this is done very poorly. And part of it is straight up the performances. I'm just going to say it right now. I don't mind a lot of these people in other projects, but I think Kate Beckinsale's terrible in this. I think Ben Affleck is freaking awful in this. I think Josh Hartnett's okay, but he's not given much. I think the best actor in it is Zod, but he doesn't do much.
So there's a bunch of there's a bunch of good acting.
Sick Boy from Trainspotting is pretty good.
No, he's all right, but he's a one joke, and then you're supposed to kind of, he's like Goose. It's like at the end of this thing, you're supposed to feel bad because his future fiance is part of the carnage and all that, and as you just see all that stuff being projected from 6 miles away, and we know everyone in this movie, everyone you've seen in something else, like they're all famous or
it's all star cast. Yeah, absolutely.
I thought all of the historical reenactment was fine, and all of the fictionalized parts were bad acting. Like, I enjoyed Alec Baldwin, I enjoyed John Voight, I enjoyed Cuba Gooding Jr. They're all playing people who existed. We know what those people did and said for the most part. And they're just, you know, like, they're just basically doing an old impersonation. Having one of the Blues Brothers be your main analyst was a little off-putting.
Oh, but, man, I love Dan Aykroyd,
but his acting, his acting was fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to blame the acting here at all. I never once thought, oh, that is just some really bad acting. What I kept thinking was, this is some bad character writing. I think the story itself, overall, if you look at the big story, it was already written because most of it's history, and all the rest of it was just, you know, taking the archetypes and putting them into place. And I thought a lot of that was fine, but then the actual characters, you never liked them. I never liked Rafe because he never got his comeuppance from the very get-go. He has a disability. He doesn't even give a shit. And, you know, he doesn't care about it. And he never gets hurt. And he's just tearing through this world, leaving carnage behind him, whether it's his friends or his girl, just by his choices. And he never really gets his comeuppance. Even when he gets his comeuppance, you realize, oh, what are you whining about? You were like with the girl for like half a minute and you never even had a relationship. And now you're going to sit over here and pout because you decided to go off and you just wanted somebody to fight for.
Yeah, he was obnoxious.
Exactly. You never even walked an animal cracker up her belly. I mean, how serious was this relationship?
But damn, if there weren't the scripted scenes right out of every other Michael Bay film. For Pete's sake, they even went and remade the animal cracker scene almost shot for shot next to the Queen Mary.
Exactly. Yeah. It was that, right? I mean, it was basically like, oh, I'm leaving tomorrow, but, you know, to go attack an asteroid or go shoot Germans or whatever I'm going to do. And this is our little one moment. I'm not going to tell you until the last second. And
I, you know what?
Have this giggly moment of...
Yeah. I've, And I've said this many times, Michael Bay is one of the greatest cinematographers of all time.
Absolutely.
He really knows what to do with a camera. Beautiful. Although, yeah. If you don't like a camera moving while it's on something that's moving, you're not going to have a good time.
Mm.
But Michael Bay cannot help himself but string up Edison lights everywhere, and it made me want to throw something at his face. Like, I'm sorry, there's a war on. There wouldn't be a bunch of electricity being used all over this street.
Mm. Yeah, well, not just
I'm okay
that.
With artistic license. I allowed it.
No, look, part of the problem is it reduces, like, one of these. Look at any other big war epic or anything that sort of chronicles something hardcore like this. As far removed as we are from it, Pearl Harbor was a big, big freaking deal. It brought us into the Second World War. It was a huge deal. 3,000 people died that day. It was gnarly. This movie doesn't really honor that. This movie stylizes it and does so, I think, with not a lot of care. It's more style and no substance, which is often a Michael Bay problem. And sometimes it works for me. Like, I still think The Rock is the greatest action movie ever. I love that movie. I could watch it now.
Because what deeper subject was really needed to be explored? None.
No.
Here, there's plenty of deep subject.
Yeah, you have the deep subject, which is this attack. And instead, you're like, Randy's right. Nobody knows how to make a scene look prettier than Michael Bay. And somehow pretty and gritty. Like, take the gritty, make it pretty. Like, he's really good at that stuff. And there aren't too many who do it quite like he does it. And it just makes me wish that didn't come with all the other vanities that comes with. Like, hire better screenwriters. Let them determine more of the outcome. Don't be a cocky butthole and make the things you make. Like, by all accounts, he's kind of a cocky wienerhead. And, you know, doesn't let other creatives be part of the process. That isn't to say that you can't make a bunch of money. Those Transformers movies made a crap ton of money, but they weren't good movies. They looked good, but they weren't good.
I want to stipulate, I think the middle third of this film is beautiful and brilliant. It's like talking about the first half of Full Metal Jacket. I wish it was the film.
Yeah.
And I was annoyed that there were no Hawaiians in the film, that it's not told at all from any kind of Hawaiian perspective ever. Watching the middle third, I cried. I was just shattered. You know, again, there should have been more of a story of Doris Miller, but seeing Doris Miller get his moment of glory before being killed, you know, in battle was awesome and so on. And it's like, hey, movie, why didn't you take what was so good and make that the movie? I don't understand.
Yeah, they should have just, like I said, the meat was good. The bread sucked. Mm-hmm. Like, get rid of the bread. Just keep the meat.
But can you blame Michael Bay for being Michael Bay? I mean, wasn't this the producer's fault?
Well, who else are we supposed to blame, though? Like,
I'm saying the producers. I'm saying the people who collected the money and said in the studios and said, let's collect some money together and make a movie about Pearl Harbor. Who we should put in the driver's seat? Hey, I know. Michael Bay.
Well, no. I don't think it worked that way, though. He pushed for this one.
And by the way, Jerry Bruckheimer is gonna Bruckheim. Like, this is 2001. This is the peak of his pouring money into, well, just make it big and crazy and loud.
Exactly.
And,
you can't blame Michael Bay for Michael Baying it up because, you know, any other director would have looked at this and said, all right, we'll keep the attack on Pearl Harbor, maybe cut down the initial setup, character setup, to half an hour before, and then we can have time for the Doolittle raid. But, you know, we'll take out this whole love triangle thing and this whole, like, trying to be MASH or trying to be not even really trying to be MASH, but trying to be,
I don't know what they were trying
as
to
the
be.
World turns.
I like the triangle thing, the love triangle thing because I think I like it, but not to the degree that it was taken to.
That they want you to not. You didn't like it as much as they wanted you to like
it. I liked the idea of the love triangle to create this tension. However, it failed at it so hard that it never worked.
Well,
for
that's
me. The spirit of it was not bad.
Yeah, and what you're talking about is that old saying: a single death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic. Like, you need to get close down into something personal for people in the audience to take it personally. I 100% agree with that. I just think this was poorly, this that part was poorly done. And in my mind, it diminished,
beautiful though,
it diminished the value of that middle bit, which should have been more impactful. And it was less impactful because I had Bruckheimerisms happening all around the periphery of it, instead of it being the focus of, you know, what that was and what it would mean and what it would cause in the following days and all that. Like, it's just a missed opportunity. They should have Dunkirked this thing.
Right.
And they didn't know how, or he didn't know how.
Yeah.
And I that's okay. I want him making Armageddon and The Rock and things like that. Like, over the top and not realistic, but energetic and fun and video gamey. Like, that's, I like that about his movies. I just think Pearl Harbor deserves something else. And I don't know if they'll ever do it again. It says here that the production costs in 2001, certainly they'd be higher today, but the production costs were more than the costs of the actual attack, like the damage the plane, ships, people lost.
Even adjusted for inflation, it was?
Yes.
Not adjusted for inflation.
Oh, no, of course not. I see what you're saying, yeah. That's, no. But yeah, but if you adjust it for inflation.
I probably bought gum last week that was more than the adjusted for inflation.
But what I'm saying is, do you think anybody even goes near this? Does somebody who knows how to make a war epic, like, I don't know, Spielberg or whoever, do they even go near Pearl Harbor anymore because this thing exists and its three-hour ass is taking up the whole seat?
People could have said the same thing after Tora, Tora, Tora. You know, I mean, there's been, this isn't the first movie about that reenacts Pearl Harbor.
No, you're right.
I think somebody definitely will jump in and try and make it.
Well, you have to. Go ahead.
I just want to demand that be the story of Japan and Hawaii and a little bit of Washington.
Well, and see, that's where we need probably to go. But that's because when this movie was made, it was right on the tail end. We're starting to get to the point that when they were making this movie, you had to be very respectful of those who still remembered Pearl Harbor, because there were people who were alive. But as we get further along, it's not that far away for 100 years, right? For Pearl Harbor to be behind us that long. And then we start treating these war movies a little different, because you have to handle it differently when people are alive and remember it. And
The guy who played Yamamoto in this film is an amazing actor named Mako.
Mako
was 9 when the actual Pearl Harbor bombing happened.
Yeah. No, right? Mako's great. Is it Mako or Mako?
I've always heard Mako.
Okay.
Mako?
Well,
I thought it was Mako too.
He's for those not familiar, he played like 10 different people on MASH during its run. He was also he's Aku in the Samurai Jack cartoon before he died. He's also been in a bunch of FilmSack movies that we've done previously. That guy is great. And also, don't forget other dude from Man in the High Castle now, and played Shang Tsung in the Mortal Kombat movies. I can't think of his name all of a sudden. Yeah. Shoot. Anyway,
you know what I would have enjoyed with this movie little more?
Great
I
wish Japanese they had actors is the point. Go ahead.
Right. I wish they hadn't just. They started to kind of look at how Soldiers from World War One kind of felt, because that's where what's his name? Not Rafe. Danny. So Danny's dead.
Yeah.
Danny's dead. Danny's dead. Right. You know, he had PTSD. He was suffering from that, and there's a little bit something going on there where it's like we almost forgot about World War One by the time World War Two came along, because it was just so loud and big and just.
Well, we did. I think we were less impacted by it. Like, Europe didn't forget.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I felt like there was something they could have explored there. And once again, they just kind of had a scene where he's just walking off sad. And I'm like, I want to see more of that.
Yeah.
Right. Like the way Eastwood did.
Letters from Iwo Jima.
Letters from Iwo Jima, and then there was the sister movie that was
Letters from Larry Sander. I don't know. What was the other one? What was that one called? Oh my gosh! Freaking Patrick is talking to me on my watch, and I don't know why. Sorry.
He's talking on your watch.
Yeah, it's that new walkie-talkie thing.
You remember World War II?
You're talking about Flags of Our Fathers.
Flags of Our Fathers. That's it.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
The same battle, different viewpoints, and you had the that would have been a really cool way to do this film, or would still be a cool way to do this film, right? Where you see it from the Japanese standpoint, you see it from the Americans/Hawaiians.
This film, and I just want to make sure we're saying Imperial Japanese, this film gives Imperial Japan some solid service There is, it is not, you know, it doesn't like make up a bunch of fiction. There's not a lot of it, right? It's just this really, like, we have to make sure we depict the decision.
You're talking about Battle of Iwo Jima, right?
No, I'm talking about Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Oh, you're thinking it didn't add a lot of fiction?
No. Pearl Harbor doesn't add anything. It's just like 60 extra seconds in this film that shows you Japanese leaders making a tough decision that they don't really want to make, and they're all steely-faced and this kind of thing. The film is very respectful to Japan, but it's definitely not the movie that it should be to tell the story of the attack. It barely scratches the surface of the Japanese story.
Yeah, I would love to know. I'd be more into a deep dive, at least at this age. I'd much more be into the historical, a very historically accurate version of this, and maybe I can just get that from a good documentary, and I don't need a feature-length film that tugs on your heartstrings. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. For some reason, it feels like you'll get more Dunkirks because they're about parts of the war that people have forgotten about or don't think about or insignificant in history. You know, they're not the big players in the big moments or whatever. I think you'll get more of those as time goes on. I feel like, not that people actively stay away from Pearl Harbor. I just think it sounds like a nightmare project.
I don't think we'll do, right. There wouldn't be another, not semi-fictional, but like another drama film as opposed to a documentary. Ken Burns needs to step up and do a Pearl Harbor.
I want Ken Burns Pacific Theater. Yeah. That's what I want it to be called.
Well,
Pacific Theater.
If you watch the war, you basically get that. It's just that
I want
it's not the entire
44
thing.
Hours yeah, of true. What the Aussies were doing and what the Japanese were doing in China and so on and so on.
Yeah, you'll get that. You get that from The War, which it's titled, his World War II documentary, and it's long, and there are huge swaths dedicated to Pearl Harbor, dedicated to all the politics behind it, certainly to the fight in the Pacific, like that already exists, but it's not a microcosmic picture of just this event, and that could be cool too. I guess what I'm saying is I'd even be okay with the drama if it was focused more on the event and less on a fake love triangle that didn't actually happen.
Well, see, I'm down with the drama part because I think every generation when they're coming up, there is that question when you're of the age between that you can be drafted or volunteer for the military. Most of us are so far behind. It's like, me and you, nobody on this podcast is even thinking about being in the military. It's not even an option for us. They don't want our old butts there.
No, we were scared of drafts in like the first Gulf invasion thing, but that was it.
So. So if this movie was speaking to a younger generation, someone who is, you know, between that age, I think that drama is good because I did fear and also like the drama of, you know, finding new love and, you know, before you ever settle down and will I, won't I go to war? You know, how is the world? How scary is the world? But it was a little bit too much here. I'm okay with the drama, though. The drama part, I like that part.
Here's some fun trivia for you. Michael Fassbender's first film he ever went out for. He didn't get it, but he went for one of the leads. So he says this was the very first film he ever did an audition for. So there's a little piece there. Here's my favorite thing about it. There is a huge connection to Black Hawk Down here. Josh Hartnett, who's the guy that's always on drugs and was in this and shot? Tom Sizemore, thank you. the crazy guy with the train spotting guy, they were all in Black Hawk Down, right. Which is a far superior war film, by the way. If you want to see a really good movie about that business, that's an awesome movie.
I want to say I feel sorry for Ewan Bremner. Because Ewan Bremner.
Oh, I thought you meant me and someone named Bremner.
I thought you said you and Bremner. Sorry for you and Bremner.
That was fun. I
feel sorry for Ewan Bremner because he's put in a role that I don't understand why. Why does everybody in the movie have to be quirky and have some thing about
them? Like, do you know why? Because of poor character writing. How do you make a character more endearing? Give them a flaw, okay? If you have a flaw that has a purpose, that's good character writing.
And the thing
is basically Stand By Me in the war.
Mm-hmm. The film should have stood on costume and set design to make those characters really interesting instead of having, you know, one have a stutter and Tom Sizemore is weird, like, and on and on.
Yeah, there's one of them.
That's what I think.
By the way, I've never met anybody with that style of stutter, and we're not casting shade on anybody with a stutter. I grew up with people with stutters, but I've never heard anybody do the thing where it sounds like there's a, I'm like, you're about to have a chest burster come out of you or something.
Right,
like,
I was going
to
say, it's the sound that they used for the Xenomorph in the Alien films.
Totally, dude.
When it's right behind you and stuff is dripping on the back of your neck.
Yeah.
I'm saying the opposite of casting shade on people with a stutter. This film, the film casts shade. The film comes really close to making fun of him.
I agree.
For his stutter, to him being comic relief. And it's like, no, you could just have a character who stutters and go on about the movie. You don't have to do it this way.
Yeah. There's a great line in the trivia about the Japanese journalists at the time who are covering this film, not at the time of the war, but I mean during the time of covering this film, says here that they were extremely offended by the fact that the army is shown having meetings outside. Meetings outside is considered to be an uncivilized and barbaric thing to do in Japan.
Huh. Right.
There's a little fun,
Michael Bay is going to shoot outside.
Oh, yeah. No, he's going to have planes go by. There's going to be stuff going on. Oh, yeah. You can't stop
him. I was shocked that he had the Department of Defense inside. Like, seriously, there are scenes, there are actual scenes where, like, Rafe has presumed dead. He comes back to life, and he's like, hi, can we go outside to talk? Like, yeah, Michael Bay wants you outside to talk.
Michael Bay wants you outside where there's lots of planes going by and stuff. We can get better filters going on. So I had to ask you guys, let's just do a quick little trivia here. Do you guys know what Michael Bay's one and only Oscar he's ever won for anything was from this film? Do you know what it was for? Does anyone know?
Oh, certainly wasn't editing.
Nope, not editing. I still say the fight was actually some pretty good editing, but the rest of the movie.
I really
liked the score for the film.
Yeah, it was all right. It was very Bruckheimer of the time, though, right?
Can you give that to
Zimmer?
Bay,
it was Zimmer.
You can give it to Bay.
Yeah. Zimmer. Well, Zimmer. That's all. I mean, that he was the guy for them. Like everything from Crimson Tide on forward, it felt like Zimmer was all up in those Bruckheimer movies. Which is fine. I like him. Yeah, I thought it was good. Sure. Did the job. I'll bet
it was nominated, but I'll bet it didn't win the Oscar that year.
It won an Oscar for Best Sound Editing. So that's interesting. Okay. That's interesting because you're coming off of Armageddon, which was notable for having horrendous sound editing and just in your face and loud for no reason and not really, it wasn't a very crafted sound. This, I will admit, I thought it sounded great. Again, especially the fighting was very convincing. Like, straight up, for a 2001 movie that did rely on some CGI here and there, I thought all that stuff held up and looked great.
The special effects were so good in this movie.
Yeah, they looked real good.
Yeah. I genuinely felt like, and this is part of the reason I was so moved and crying, I felt like I was watching people be torn apart by 50 caliber bullets.
Yeah, I'm watching that stuff explode. Like there's a U-boat that gets popped and that bomb falls into the kitchen of that ship and just sits there and doesn't go off right away. Like there's a lot of really good, smart, tense. It's the stuff he does really well in the moment. And so I want to give the movie full credit for that. Like that stuff's really good. And if I had a recommendation for everyone listening who said, oh yeah, I'm skipping this. I know how it ends. So I'm not going to. I don't need to watch I would say go and watch the middle and screw the two other pieces, and I think you would at least get something out of it. And it's not that long.
It started about an hour and 20 minutes in when Ben Affleck's character comes back, blah, blah, blah. They have their fight, and then pretty much right after the fight, it's like, oh, okay. You know, when
I'm going to disagree. I would hate for people to miss out on some of those beautiful shots, though, because I think even though a lot of what was going on was just BS. I was enjoying
beautiful
the
shots,
visual.
You mean men's bare butts getting shots, right?
That was uncomfortable, but still.
Why was that in the movie?
Because they were trying to be... It's not that those things can't work. You can do those little montages. Yeah. They did it in... what's the movie where they're all going to space? I used to love this movie. The Right Stuff.
Oh, The Right Stuff.
Remember The Right Stuff? It was great. And they had the whole like montage sequence of them running and blowing those tubes to make the ball go higher, and it's meant for a little bit of comedy, but also it's the rigorous training. Like they could have reduced that butt shot stuff down to just a simple montage. Instead, it was
one butt shot.
Yeah, and it was also a weird story choice because this is Underworld. Kate Beckinsale telling this story after it happened to these girls on the train.
Yeah, on the train.
Which is a weird narrative choice, given that that was never used for any of the rest of the movie. It was just for that relationship. It's fine. It's just all I'm saying, and Dunaway, I take your meaning, but there's no other shots to miss. It's like you know what? It's like seeing the best Sin set ever, but you're surrounded by fresh dog shit. Like, that's not worth the shot. Just go to where it's not dog shitty and watch that middle bit, because it's cool. It's really well done, and it bums me out that they couldn't decorate the ends better than they did. But yeah, whatever. Yeah. Opportunity lost there, Michael Bay. Good job.
We've said this in a number of different ways now, and I want to just ask you guys a question. Like, other than special effects, let's just forget special effects for a moment. What was the thing about this movie you liked? Like, what really got you jazzed?
Music, you mentioned. I like that.
I don't know. I mean, seeing some of the actors in there, I think Alec Baldwin does a really good job. I think Aykroyd.
Aykroyd.
I love
it. I don't know.
I love
that. Yeah, I mean, I feel like John Voight has more plastic on his face than the combined Real Housewives of Miami, New York, and Atlanta.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it was that dramatic in that cabinet meeting in real life.
Right, up thing?
That's what I got asked. It's like, did that happen? I don't know. I doubt it.
If it did happen.
I wanted one of those guys to stand up and say, he's been faking it the whole time.
That would have been awesome. But like, every face in there you recognize. There's tons of great character actors in this movie that you've seen in a billion things and more.
I always like seeing Fichtner. You know, I mean, you see him in every single Michael. He must have something on Michael Bay, like some dirt.
He actually looks like Michael Bay. If you ever look at those two together with the hair, they look like each other. No, it's weird.
Yeah, so I would like to
at the same time.
Yeah.
I would like to point out the very beginning of this movie, the acting by two children in a plane is pretty good.
No. Go ahead.
For kids being depicted being kids. Mm-hmm. Now, when one decides to pick up a 2x4 and go after William Fichtner, I'm like, no, that shouldn't be in this movie. But I felt like they got a great little performance out of them and the old busted up fighter.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
They're sitting in front of each other and pretending to be flying. I thought that was really
cute. It's just
cute.
A lot of
stuff. That's not how you spell rudder.
Over and over.
And how is that trope of the, I'm going to hit you with a 2x4, and that's going to be the thing that ends the fight, because you're going to realize how wrong you were. Instead
that just escalates the fight, doesn't it?
Right.
Anytime a 2x4 comes,
I'm going to beat the shit out of both of you.
Yeah, Fichtner.
Yeah, that scene ends with the body of a child being left in a cornfield.
Yeah, and no one knowing about it. Like, exactly. 50 years goes by, and no one even knows about it, because that's kind of how things were then. But apparently also Matt Damon was in this, and I didn't see him. I tried to find him, but he was firing a machine gun during the attack. A little cameo shot of him hanging out. They would do that back then. This is kind of post. Hold on.
Interesting. Continue, please.
Continue. Do not inhale breathing. Your tea.
Yeah, there's not even like a.
So do we need to call somebody or what? I mean, I'm a little worried.
No, you're fine. Just keep talking.
But Ibbot, you're onto something. Talk.
Yeah, there's not even like a photo of that brief cameo of Matt Damon firing off a gun, which is what he supposedly.
Which is why I don't believe he's actually in the movie. I think this is one of the, or like he visited the set because he was best friends with Affleck at the time. And
I did see the dude that looks like Bruce Willis walking by.
Oh yeah, what'd you think? That everyone says that's absolutely not him, but he looks just like him.
It looks just like Bruce Willis as McClane with the wife beater T-shirt and the.
If you get that many men in one place, you're gonna find some people that look like other people.
I mean, always
short haircuts. I mean, come on.
Right, but that one is there's a photo of that one. I'll put it in our Slack.
Was this anybody's first viewing?
No, but it felt like it because I couldn't remember a thing from it.
I spent the whole film, and there's a lot more Stannis Baratheon than I was expecting. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm sure I've never seen him in anything else.
That's not Stannis, by the way. Movie. You've confused him. That's not Stannis Baratheon. He looks a lot like him.
Looks like him, yeah.
Different actor. But I know who you're talking about. Because that was my first thought, too. He is also British, So you're not too far from the tree, but he's that dude's in a million things. But he's the one thing I remember mostly from was that Borgia's Pope show that was on Showtime some years ago. He played like Pope this show. Rebellious the Pope show. He was a rebellious cardinal.
We're talking about an actor named Colm Feore. Yeah. C-O-L-M is his first name. Colm.
Mm-hmm. It might be Feore. Italian then or something. I don't know. But he's not Stannis. Stannis is a different guy, and that guy is also cool. But you should put them in a movie together because they're almost identical.
As brothers. Like, it's some kind of weird love triangle.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be all right. Wait a minute. Hold on. I like where you're going with this. Could it have a wartime backdrop? And
absolutely.
I like that idea. What a great idea. Yeah.
What was Michael Bay thinking? There's your movie. Well, wait. He did make that. Weird. but I like him as an actor, although he let his accent slip toward the end when he...
Yes, and so does Ben Affleck. They're both Colm Feore and Ben Affleck are from Boston. They have this particular accent. And they're both working really, really hard to not. They want to sound more Midwestern, a general, not Boston thing. And it slips every now and then. And, you know, Michael Bay, who cares? Let him go.
Yeah, let him go.
Run with it.
That's Michael Bay.
Keep rolling.
Yeah, yeah, just keep it on. Keep on going on. What's his name again? Colm Feore? I like that guy. He was in...
F-E-O-R-E.
What was that movie with... Triple X guy.
Riddick?
The Chronicles of Riddick won the second one. He's the main bad guy in that, and he just eats the screen. He's just super cool, that guy. I wouldn't mind seeing more FilmSack movies with that guy. And I'm sure we have, and I just don't remember him, but he's pretty awesome. We haven't even mentioned the elephant in the room. I don't mean she's an elephant, but Jennifer Garner, this is how she met. This is how she met Ben Affleck. And in my head, my memory was she was the main role. And
That she was the Beckinsale.
Yeah. I had that backwards. She was barely
Jennifer
in this.
Jennifer Garner was in this movie?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Like, the only time you noticed her was when she came out of the barracks with her shirt off.
Like, no, she didn't.
She did. Yeah, she's fascinating.
I'm looking at her name, but I honestly had no idea Jennifer Garner
was in this. She's the mousy one with the glasses.
Really true.
Yeah, I'm going to say she pulled the Clark Kent.
Yeah, Superman. Clark Kented Randy. Wow.
I was much more noticing Jamie King because she has she has line.
Yeah.
And also she's doing this accent that is just so fun. I like the Jamie King character. I was just like, can we have her say more? Cause I love her voice.
No, she's awesome. I didn't buy that she fell for Ewan Bremmer. Lieutenant Red Winkle.
She was supposed to be super young.
Oh, come on. That's what, that's the whole thing. I mean, come on. We all married up above our weight class.
Agreed.
I'm looking for pictures of Jennifer Garner in this film because I really never noticed
her. Come on. She's the one with the glasses who fumbles through the medicine cabinet looking for the right thing. And she's kind of like the more stodgy of all the nurses.
And
it's
she's the
really
one.
Really, Jennifer Garner just wearing glasses, Randy.
It's bad, and
I may have remember, I may have thought it was Kate Beckinsale, and
she looks at you and says, "What's in your wallet?" Right there at the end.
Of course.
When Jamie King dies in the movie, she's the one that kind of starts panicking and losing it, and Kate Beckinsale has to tell her to do your job and stay on target. That's right. Jennifer Garner.
Okay.
And that's where they met. They were like, "Hey, we should put our genitals together," and then they got married. And then they had the children, and now they're getting divorced. So there's your story.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to talk about chemistry for just a minute. We don't talk much about chemistry. We don't always get to see it, these love triangles. So I felt like there was this great chemistry going on between Ben Affleck and Kate Beckinsale.
Really?
But I did not feel that with Josh Hartnett.
I didn't feel it with any of them. None of them gave me the chemistry at all to me.
Mm-hmm. I felt like there was chemistry going on between the others. Well, I didn't feel like that it worked at all.
Ben Affleck is known for putting his chemistry around town in Hollywood. So.
The only chemistry I noticed was the Cuba Gooding Jr. and his XO.
Yeah, two. That was
almost
my
a little bit too much love. I thought that myself. I'm like, we give everybody else a love interest, but we're going to give Cuba Gooding Jr. the love interest of this.
By the way, who names their kid Doris? Who names their boy Doris? I'm not saying it's a problem.
Someone who wants him to learn how to fight.
But in the 40s. It's in the 40s and the 20s and the 30s or whatever. You name your kid Doris, you're really just asking for a different level of trouble. Like, he's going to have a hard time. My favorite is Michael Shannon's name in the character. He's Lieutenant Goosewood.
Goosewood.
And those are two different names. Goose is the first name. Wood is his last name. That's an awesome name. Goosewood. Anyway, just something I noticed there. Also, runner-up, if not winner, of the worst IMDb photo of the week is Catherine Kellner. She plays Nurse Barbara. And for some reason, this kind of goes to Randy's cropping problem he has with a lot of these photos. But if you look at Catherine's photo, it's just stupid.
Oof.
Yeah.
Where is it? Catherine.
Oh, I see her now. Nurse Barbara.
Hi, focus on my chest.
Here is my
chest,
torso.
Nothing. Focus on my pit.
Here's my pit. Here's my torso. Enjoy.
What do you think the picture's from?
You don't usually get to see side pit like that. That's pretty sexy.
A J. Crew ad for that top.
Oh yeah, except it's really badly photographed. Let's see, which one is she in the? Oh, she's the shorter kind of goosey. The one that reminded me of
the goosey.
The one from 90210. The blonde. What's her name?
Not Tori Spelling.
Yeah, if you look at that first photo under her name, where all the nurses are there, she's got a Tori Spelling kind of vibe to her. She did in the movie as well. To me. Just a little bit.
All right, I can see it. By the way, Randy, that photo that we're talking about, second from the right is Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, with the glasses.
Okay.
Looking all Jennifer Garner-y.
She definitely should not. Yeah.
Maybe it was her alias.
That is so weird. I'm looking at her and I'm still like, my brain is like, that's Jennifer Garner?
Those round glasses do not go with her face.
Listen, Ibit, I want you just to know that didn't go past, man. I got it. Okay. Just in case the audience didn't hear it, these two didn't hear it, I thought it was amazing, and I didn't want you to. That effort was not in vain. That was really good. An alias joke. Very nice. Was this pre-alias or post-alias, this thing?
Post-alias.
It has to be post-alias.
Post-alias.
All right. Because I'm trying to remember when Dude Where's My Car was for her career, because she was in that as well. Let's see here.
I feel like all that was post-Alias. Wasn't Alias like almost the first thing that she...
First thing I knew her from.
Let's see. Dates, times.
So
date and times.
Oh, wait. You know what?
Was this pre-Alias?
Where's Alias?
It could be during Alias.
Alias was 2001 to 2006.
Oh,
so.
Wow. This was at the very beginning of her Alias.
Right? Yeah. And so Dude, Where's My Car was... Hold on. Was 2000. So, yeah, no, this was all her star hadn't risen yet. It was about to, though. So.
Maybe that's the deal. Maybe I saw this after it was released on video, because maybe I didn't see it in theaters. Yeah. That could have been the situation. I saw it after I saw Alias.
I did not see this in theaters.
Elektra.
I would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elektra was really bad.
I absolutely saw this in theaters back in the days of SDDS.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes.
And it was loud and angry. And I remember coming out of it really liking it and being strangely, like, I found it very odd that critics were panning this film, because I remember in 2001 thinking it was a fine film.
Yeah.
So the note I made about the IMDb listing is, have you ever seen so many uncredited actors? How did they not get in the credits? Like 100 people could form a coalition and petition to be in the credits.
There wasn't time.
It's unbelievable how many uncredited actors are in this film.
I have to say, I'm very interested in her new show, Camping. I don't know if you've seen trailers for it. It looks like a hoot.
Is it about the guy who predicted the end of the world?
No, it's not about Harold Camping. No interviews, he said. No interviews. This is, she plays a character named Catherine, and as best I can tell, she takes over a campground that her parents used to own and has to be sort of in charge of all these wacky people. And it just looks a little rude and fun, and I can't tell. Is this a Netflix deal? I think it's a Netflix deal. It's coming soon.
She's one of those actresses that I like, but I feel like her in real life is a lot like the characters that she typically plays, kind of a type A, might be borderline, you know, OCD.
Maybe.
It's weird that we're talking so much about this character.
We love
this
her
actress.
Cause we love her. She's great. I liked it.
Yeah.
I wish she
was
what's
in
more
your wallet,
things.
Randy?
Yeah. What's in your wallet?
It's so weird to me because when I thought about this episode of Film Sack and I watched this movie, like her name never crossed my mind. I'm just shocked.
Yeah. No, this is one of those, this happens on the show once in a while where somebody, it's usually me, but we'll miss something completely and the rest of us will be like, wait, she was right there. But yeah, Jennifer Garner, well done. You did it. You made Pearl Harbor better perhaps than it would have been, and you met your future husband and divorced husband. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. You guys want to know what grossed me out? Because I got...
Oh, yeah.
This is an easy
one
for me.
Hold on just a second.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Was it when Tom Hardy pukes in the toilet? Oh, never mind. I saw that halfway between the first half and the second half of Pearl Harbor, and I thought that Venom was part of this movie.
Oh, yeah. Don't you hate that? Like, you're going to do that, right? You conflate stuff. Yeah. There's,
dude, I got you beat because I watched Godzilla 1998, and everything that happened, I'm like, wait.
Yeah.
Have they bombed the island yet?
Wait, is that Wait, when you look, say 98? You mean the
Silicon
old?
Show up?
You mean the Wait. Old? The one with Matthew Broderick in it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Why have we not?
That movie doesn't
that?
Get enough love. I love that movie.
We should film. Oh,
why did you save that for Film Sack? Because that's definitely on our list.
Oh, I'll watch it.
I'll get it.
It's on Hulu. Okay. Yeah. I gotta say, Scott, I thought of you, and I know this may not be on the mark, but I thought of you when Ben Affleck gets to England. He's on an airfield, and some English guy is like, "Oh yeah, let me show you your plane. We just got it back. We're gonna have to do a little repair to it."
Oh.
What you're gonna see here is on the inside of the canopy of the plane is a bunch of fresh, bright red blood and skull matter from the guy who previously flew it. Yeah. And then Ben Affleck is like, "Ooh, I gotta touch that."
No, you're in the running, but that's probably top two or three. The gross thing for me was tasting Cuba Gooding Jr.'s blood. You guys remember this scene where somebody says, "You're not hurt.
Yes.
This isn't hurt." And he tastes his blood and says,
"Right." He says, "I'm cut." Yeah. And the guy is like, "That's not a cut. That's a scratch."
Yeah. And he says, and he reaches out, touches his cut, tastes it, and goes, "That's not a cut. That's a scratch." It's like, dude, don't eat in someone else's blood. That's disgusting.
Show me the flavor.
Yeah. That was foul. That is entirely disgusting. I mean, look, an attack on an entire island and base of people is probably the most disgusting thing you can do in the world.
Well,
but
sure.
In this film that I think so not gives proper legacy to that, instead grossed kind of gross, me out with tasting anyone's blood. Don't do it.
Another thing that really stuck out for me was the whole getting your shots sequence, because you know there's a lot of pretty women who are having to look at hairy buttholes. And that's just not fun. It's not good.
That's only if you pull the towel down too low. Don't,
you know, like Ben Affleck
went too far.
Yeah. Like Ben Affleck follows what's her name over to a new station and then barges in and she's like, "Pull down your skivvies," and he's like, "All right," and he's bent over and you're just like, "Hairy butthole,"
yeah,
right in her
hairy
face.
Butthole.
What a bully Ben Affleck plays in this movie. Just gets away with everything. You know, if he shows off that he goes and he tells, and it's like, "Yeah, it's cool. It's cool, yeah. I'm not even gonna get punished. I'm gonna get promoted."
You know what else I didn't like? I like a good patriotic film. I'm an American that, you know, likes where he is, and you know, we have our issues. Certainly right now we have our issues, but like you know, this British guy walking over to him and going, "Well, if only half the Americans who come to fight like this war as good as you, well," it's just a little much, man. It's like, calm down, everybody.
That was the penultimate height of jingoism in this film. The the obvious, truly, you know, standing tall jingoistic moment is Doris Miller manning the gun.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was like, I came out of it and I was like, is this movie too rah-rah United States? Because, you know, like the rest of the whole world was pissed off that the U.S. wasn't in the war yet. And it actually felt like it wasn't as jingoistic as it could have been. How about that?
Yeah.
It was, I agree. It was close, but not quite. I was annoyed by that spot too, Scott. I was like, really?
It's just a little too much. Like, and I don't know if this was pre or post 9/11. It was the same year, but I don't know when this came out. I guess I got to look that up. But, you know, I would understand maybe if it was more so after than before or whatever. But, I mean, genuinely, there are moments of, you know, real heroism in all kinds of stories to be told and from all points of view and everything else. I just don't like it when it's just rah rah, here's the flag, you're the best man, thank goodness the American Jesus is coming over to save us. Like it makes me uncomfortable.
That annoyed me. It also annoyed me that our two primary heroes they were first of all, they were like, "Oh, let us save everybody, we're gonna go find two planes, everybody's gonna get killed, we're gonna save, we're gonna run all the Japs all back by ourselves, and then we're going to land, and then we're going to go see if we can give some blood. And then while we're giving blood and we're a pint down, we're going to head back to the harbor and pick up everybody."
Yeah.
And then later, we're going to be the principals in this whole other crazy event.
Yeah.
Like that's how wars are. You only really have about 20 soldiers, and you just move them all around the globe from 1 year to the next, and
which
they're in every part.
Hero level,
I didn't like that. Really didn't like that. That really bothered me. Also, just the visual that Josh Hartnett is strapped to a cross. And it makes
that was a bit much as a sacrifice.
It's like, did not even make
that connection.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was very sacrificial and, you know, like, that was lame. And then, you know, when he gets back and it's all, they've got a very ornate, fancy memorial statue in the back
of the backyard. And I wonder if he really did write on it because he told him not to do it. That was his last request. Do not write on that.
Yeah.
Because you can't spell anything for crap. And
don't do it.
We needed to be reminded of the dyslexia subplot.
Did
Bay just not want to like have two filming locations? Let's film at a cemetery where they're touching the gravestone, remind us that he's passed away, but they still love him. And then we'll go back to their house and see the airplane and go for a fly.
And what little bit of the character we did get to know, Rafe's character along the way, there's no way he would be happy straddled with a kid and not fight anymore. The whole thing he said constantly was like, I got to be up there. I got to be fighting. I got to be flying. I got to be fighting. You know, he should have been the one that died.
Yeah. Here's what they need to do. They need to, everyone who made this, just go watch Schindler's List again and see how you do it. And then maybe go make your war movie again.
Once again, I got to say that as much as I poo-poo on Pearl Harbor and I poo-poo for it for being 3 hours, it really did not feel like a three-hour movie. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of good action moments, and I had a lot of fun. There was always something good to look at.
We haven't talked it yet, though. This is important. We haven't talked about the actor who we have now seen back-to-back when we watched Seven. Hyperventilation Man is also Hyperventilation Man in this movie. Hyperventilating in both films, back-to-back.
He went from sticking a knifey dildo into a prostitute to having somebody shove their fingers in his neck.
A knifey dildo. I like that. That's something else right there.
I'm submitting it for show title right now. Oh, we don't do that on this show.
Yeah. That's true, we don't. But people can. Yet. But you'll waste your time.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's great, and he's in lots of things. And I want to say we're going to end up with like a third or fourth movie down the road where he does the same thing. And I know I've seen it before with him. That wasn't Seven and wasn't this, but something else where he breathes too much or freaks out or is hurt. And he's great at it. Like, I know why they hired him. It's like, hey, who's good at looking like he's really distressed? Oh, that guy from Seven, they say. Hire him.
Right.
Anyway, so there's your movie. We're not going to go 3 hours today. Instead, we're going to jump to some
I'll tell clips. I actually had this strange bit of trivia in my memory that didn't turn out to be true. The attack on Pearl Harbor was 90 minutes long, and I thought that the sequence in the film was also 90 minutes long, and it wasn't. It just felt like it.
It was shorter
than 90 minutes, but it felt like an hour and a half.
That would be hard to maintain, I'm guessing, from a filmmaking standpoint. Although I don't know, Dunkirk says hello. That movie's like a nonstop barrage. All right, let's get to clips. Yeah. We have a number of them here. They begin with this one. Which is not a nice thing to say about Germans when you're a little kid.
You gotta get those dirty German bandits.
Gotta get them dirty German bandits.
This movie really was actually kind of careful with not using too many of the stereotypes. We would throw in some bad stereotypes here in War II.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just go back and watch any Bugs Bunny. Yeah. Even that was tame compared to what we were saying in the streets, probably.
Yeah. They should. Didn't they? There was a TV at some point that was playing that old. Anti-Hitler Daffy Duck thing.
Nazi Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yeah, it's good stuff. They did... What? What's this?
Okay, we're going left, right?
Right.
Right like we're going right or right like we're going left?
Well, now you got me all mixed up. I don't know. Make up your mind.
Yep, they're the ones you want on your top secret mission. When you can't tell if you're going left or right. That's what you want.
And their radios were working really well.
No kidding.
Yeah. They were better than you'd expect in 1938.
Don't buzz the tower, Maverick.
Yeah. Okay, Goose. All right, here's something that says, I put funny part in PH. Oh, Pearl Harbor, duh. All right, so here's a funny part. Here you go.
Yes, sir, an entirely unacceptable use of military aircraft, sir.
Okay. Now, I thought it was funny at the time, but as I kept recording the movie, I went, oh, they're just going to keep doing this. So now I don't actually think it's that funny. Because you heard, like, a million times more.
Right. You thought like, oh, my God, I can't believe they left that take in where he makes that funny noise.
Yeah. And then they did it over and over, and I went, oh, that's not unique at all. What am I doing? All right. Don't get cute with me, son.
Don't get cute with me, son.
I just like how dramatic he is there. Yeah. It's pretty good.
I like Alec Baldwin. Man, and 17 years ago, Alec Baldwin looks so much younger than you think he should look for 17 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's the Alec Baldwin I want.
Yeah.
Like, I would prefer that this Alec Baldwin and 30 Rock Alec Baldwin is the only Alec Baldwin we have access to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Match Game Alec Baldwin. I feel like
That's the same Alec Baldwin I'm talking about.
Okay, good.
I don't want access. I would like for him to leave those acting experiences and like step into a coffin and it gets closed and locked and he doesn't have like a real life.
You don't want the getaway Alec Baldwin ever again.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't want the outside of fiction Alec Baldwin. I don't want real life Alec Baldwin. I just want Jack Donaghy.
Disgusting little pig.
Yeah.
And your mother, and I hate you.
Yeah. Isn't she that's with Justin Bieber now? Isn't that the girl? I think so, isn't it? Haley Baldwin.
Oh, really?
Isn't that
she's with
I think her and Bieber are like getting married or something. They're pretty serious, I guess. Yeah, I
heard that he got married. I didn't realize that it's to
imagine Thanksgiving
to Alec Baldwin's daughter that he left that horrible. Haley Baldwin. Oh my gosh, well, engaged. Yeah,
pretty sure. And
you know what blows my mind is that Justin Bieber is only 24 years old.
I don't like it.
I feel like we've been hearing about Justin Bieber for 30 years.
Right.
Yeah, he's his impact has been.
Oh, long. No. Haley Baldwin is the daughter of Stephen Baldwin.
Okay. That's better.
That's worse. Thanksgiving at the Baldwins, man. Imagine that. Okay, never mind.
Can I go hang out with Uncle Alec?
Right.
He's nicer.
Oh my God.
All right, here's a great line, I thought.
Very, very good bullshit.
I like that for some
reason. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Nurses.
That's a trope. You should put a trope alert on that.
I should, since I haven't played one today. There you go.
You're wrong. I'm in charge, but you really impressed me with your lie, so I'm going to go with your idea.
Yeah.
That trope needs to die. No one ever experienced that in real life, not even one.
I don't know. Modern politics says different. Hey, here's one about nurses waiting.
Come on, guys. We got nurses waiting.
Yeah, because they're a horny bunch of sailors.
We got nurses waiting.
They're not sailors. Pilots, sorry. Boy, the life of an Air Force pilot, not a lot of regiment. You notice that in this? They were just lounging around, getting drunk in cars. Well,
don't they do that with every military movie where the characters you're focused on kind of have the life of ease and with the exception of Full Metal Jacket, but kind of have the life of ease of like, oh, everybody else is running around. I mean, even in Full Metal Jacket, Matthew Modine's character, once he moves into his journalism position, it's like, yeah, well, we're soldiers, we're in the war here, but I can go pretty much do whatever I want.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sucky, sucky.
Just like to point out Scott Johnson.
That's terrible.
I just want to point out this was not the Air Force. The Air Force didn't come into being in its current incarnation until 1947.
So Navy pilots.
I want people emailing you.
Navy pilots, then, right? Is that the deal?
They were army pilots, and then there were some Navy things going on.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's good to know. I didn't know that. I figured the Air Force is always here, but what do I know? Nurses can't.
Yeah.
Here's nurses can't dance.
Hey, come on! Nurses can't dance by themselves.
See, we're starting to go down the hole there.
They can. And do
they really do all the setup with that character just so they can have he's running into the barracks to warn everybody and can't get the words out to warn them before the bullets come in?
I think that whole setup was that, yes. I do. And that was bothersome. Yeah. I hated that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's this actually really horrible, tragic moment. And they have to play that card. He's the guy that's peeing and awake. Oh, come on, man. It's lame. All right.
Yeah.
Very cute butt.
He did have a very cute butt.
Great. Except the butthole, right, Randy? He didn't like the hairy butt.
Very cute. Hairy. Maybe it was a hairy cute butt.
Oh, a hairy cute butt.
Hairy cute butt.
Yeah. He's my favorite character.
Played ball for the Kansas City Royals in 1936.
Harry Cutebot rounds third. All right. Here's a today. Oh, I don't know what this is.
Today.
Oh, when he gets poked, he yells today really loud.
Today. Oh,
yeah. Goes, wow. I don't think even the Pierce Brosnan 0-60 took place that quickly.
Oh yeah. You're the
then maybe you should go somewhere else.
The movie, you're reminding me of how the movie makes a case that this was largely an intelligence failure.
Yeah.
On the part of the United States, where the U.S. people who were trying so hard to figure out what was happening before it happened were just outfoxed by superior Japanese intelligence.
Yeah.
And I've studied Pearl Harbor a bit. It's not like they could have known this was coming and it wouldn't have changed much.
Right.
There was an enormous force coming at Oahu. And like, what are you going to do? Pull some ships out of harbor where they're all out in the ocean and easier to bomb? Yeah. Like,
it's real hard for us to relate with since we've had radar for so long and we understand it. It was really in its infancy and communication is so much faster. Communication was still very slow, even at this point in time. Yeah. So in order to move such a large military machine that wasn't really primed and ready, it just showed that flaw.
Like, you could muster a little anti-aircraft stuff, but the point is the overall attack could have only been thwarted by the people at the top making decisions to not put the whole fleet together in one place.
Right.
And that wasn't a failure of intelligence. That was just a failure of imagination. They never dreamed that Japan was going to attack like
that.
Yeah,
they had that throwaway line where the guy goes, well, we've clumped up all our ships so we can better protect them. Yeah. And I went, that makes sense, you dumbasses. Put them all in one place, and everyone knows.
Right.
How old is the "don't put all your eggs in one basket" phrase?
Well, I mean, you know, when you do that with battleship, you lose instantly.
Yeah,
instantly,
right. Yeah, actual battleships. It freaking A4. Ah, shit. A5. Oh no. A6. Like,
Having said this, I thought the scene where Dan Aykroyd is standing up for his intelligence. Right. And saying, well, that's not my job, that's your job, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a wonderful scene. That I like my favorite scene in the movie, probably.
Wow. Yeah. And the way he delivers is great.
Yeah. Very cool. Here's another where Thinger yells.
I think you hit the bone there. Well, okay.
Here's a dumb line.
I'll really, really lick you.
All right. There's that.
Jeez. Yeah. Does that come with the inability to read? Is dumb crap like that.
Yes,
he had double dose of whatever they were giving him.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
yeah. Whatever the shot is doesn't make you drunk, but if you have just another one,
yeah, right.
Yeah. What was that? They were vaccines. They were vaccines, weren't they? That's the idea.
Yeah, they were vaccines.
Vaccinated. Yeah, right. You don't get two vaccines and get drunk. That's stupid. Oh my gosh! So this whole movie is starting to get worse.
Now I'm really not going to get polio.
Here's something that says she is pretty bad. Oh, I think the Kate Beckinsale really phones it in, and I like her, but I don't like her in this. Here's her lines.
I don't understand. You're in the U.S. Army. How could they order you to go?
Oh my lord, that's bad acting, dude. I mean, I am with Dunaway, dude. You're right about characters badly written. That's also horribly delivered dialogue. That's just bad. Okay, here's something called Track 57, and I don't know why.
Track 57.
Here it is.
Track 57!
Oh, because that guy yells it. I thought it was a goof in my file format that I had called it Track 57. Oh, boy. All right, here's Mako or Mako. Moko, what'd you call him?
Mako.
Uh oh, better get Mako.
Sing some words. Samurai Jack. Oh, he's so good. Miss that guy. He's dead, you know.
It's the reason why you said you missed him. We got it.
I wrote here, look who it is, because we just had this guy in another film sack and also other stuff.
I thought I'd come in on my day off, work on my new invention, the Goose Cruise Fan. I'm going to be a rich fella.
No, I'm wrong. That's Zod. I was thinking of somebody
Michael
else.
Shannon, yeah. Yeah,
I'm thinking of a different guy. We'll get to him in a minute.
Cruise.
Here's Aykroyd.
They know we read their mail. They're trying to make us think their fleet is moving south. I'm not buying it.
Jane, you ignorant slut. And then here's here he is again.
We are two wild and crazy guys.
Here he is again doing I don't know what.
Break the damn naval code, Captain, so I can make a better decision. Aye, sir. We are trying.
That's so Aykroyd. I love him. Mm-hmm. This made me
He's
all...
a codebreaker in sneakers, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He played Mother. In that
Mother,
movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of his best roles. And he was Grocer in Gross Point Blank, which is the greatest role in the history of
Dan Aykroyd.
No, he was
much Grocer in Nothing But Trouble.
Yeah.
Squirrini.
I would take his role. I think his best role was in Gross Point Blank. I freaking love that movie so much. I don't watch it right now.
Wasn't My Girl, huh?
We should, you know what? No, it wasn't My Girl, although he's good in that. But I think we should watch For Film Sack, Gross Point Blank, because we're due a good movie.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen it, by the way.
Oh, my Lord. You would love this movie, Brian.
Oh, I know. It's been on my, why haven't I watched that yet? And I just never can seem to do it.
We're doing it. It makes me all warm inside.
Well, that makes me feel all warm inside.
Okay, great.
For me, and it's a bit role, but for me, Dan Aykroyd in 51st Dates, just because I want him as my personal doctor.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he was in that. You're right.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that. Yeah.
I want him in more things now because he's kind of getting this jowly, kind of starting to look like the Nixon he used to play on SNL. I want him more, and he's not doing enough. He's sitting around talking about aliens and his freaking vodka company. I want more, like, roles for Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm.
It bums me out that he's kind of, like, slowed down on that, but whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, here's this. All right, we're done with that guy. here's Trent. I don't know.
You trained us well.
Oh. That's when Cuba Gooding Jr. was having his love moment with
us. Oh,
yeah.
Dying Commander.
Commander.
More ammo, please.
I need more ammo! I need more ammo, ladies!
All right. Jeez.
Ladies.
He needs more ammo. I like Sizemore in everything. Yeah. I wish he wasn't such a broken man in real life. I love his roles, though. Like, and it's always kind of the same guy, you know? And like straight up, he doesn't really have a lot of range in terms of the different characters. He's in every military movie, it felt like, from this era. Mm-hmm. Save Your Private Ryan, Black Hawk Down, like a million of these things, but I just can't get enough of him in him. I think he's great. He's just a psycho in real life. I don't know what this is. Let's see.
I don't know what to do.
Oh, there's your, it's your lady. Yeah. It's your girl. It's
Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Garner. And that scene from Alias. <Just kidding. laughs> Her handler had to show her what to do. Okay, here he is. This is the one. Here's Herschel again.
Pearl Harbor caught us unawares because we didn't face facts. This isn't a time for ignoring them again.
Rick, we got to get out of here before the dead come back. Mm-hmm. Herschel was in, what was the last movie we saw Herschel in? It was a few weeks ago. He was the bad guy.
Yeah.
That was a very forgettable movie. What was it?
Yeah, it's, we keep seeing him and it's like, you know, like maybe he was in Heat, but there's like Val Kilmer and you don't pay attention to him.
All right. The one we just saw, he was the bad guy and his daughter. Oh, geez. He didn't really. He was. Ah, that's going to drive me crazy.
Way of the Gun?
Way of the Gun. Way of the Gun. Way of the Gun.
Yeah.
Way of the Gun. That's it.
Way of the Gun.
Yep.
Way of the Gun.
Way of the Gun. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Here's this.
I like sub commanders. They don't have time for bullshit, and neither do I.
Nice going, James.
So I'm only in this 3.5-hour movie for 2 minutes.
Why are sub commanders more pressed for time than the rest of us? I'm confused about that.
I don't know.
Is it? And does he mean submarine commanders or commanders that are less than other commanders?
Oh, or does he mean submissive commanders who like to be on the bottom?
Does he mean?
Yeah. Or does he mean commanders who like hoagies?
Oh, sub commanders. Mm.
Like sandwich artists.
That's pretty good. All right, here's this.
No. Okay.
All right, there's that. And then.
Okay.
That was, but I actually did laugh at that part.
That was all right.
Okay.
I love, dude, Michael Shannon can do no wrong. I love him.
Yeah.
What's this?
Most officers would have thrown you in the brig.
Most nurses would have gone on to someone else instead of keeping their fingers plugged in your artery.
Jeez, that's some blackmail there.
Saved your life. You should do exactly what I say forever.
Yes, you should break all military law. Get us all thrown in the jail into the brig. Do that because I put my finger in your hole. All right. Here's
Back it up.
Here's old man.
If
45 years old. I'm an old man. You guys have your whole lives ahead of you.
Oh, yeah. You're old, dude. I guess in the 30s, 40s, you were old.
Dude, I both chuckled at that, like, oh, wow, we're like senior citizens then. Thanks, Alec Baldwin.
Let's go to Denny's and get a deal. And then finally, let's not forget, this featured the paper guy from Waterworld.
Add 10 more cans of fuel for each plane, every plane.
That guy.
What's that, man? Kim Coates?
Yeah, it was Kim Coates.
I didn't realize that.
Screaming at everybody, getting shit done, and saying, have you ever seen paper? Just look at it. All right, he's awesome. There's your clips, and that means this. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Loud? Check. Long? Check. Explosive and sappy in equal degrees? Check. Star Trek connections. There's a ton of them. I don't know which ones even hit here. I don't even want to. It's too big, Daryl. This is so much stuff. Like, there's a billion
people. A lot. Yeah.
I'm trying to see.
He color coded them though, didn't he? I remember seeing a color coded, and maybe we focus on the.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots of Star Trek connections. This is the movie that proves that everything's connected to Star Trek.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if there's any.
Oh yeah. So yellow we have to do.
Okay. What was yellow? I copied and pasted it and lost my
notes. Oh, okay. So Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa, who played Commander Minoru Genda in this movie, also played the Mandarin Bailiff in Encounter at Farpoint.
Right. He's the guy that plays Shang Tsung in the Mortal Kombat movies and is brilliant in Man in the High Castle show.
I'm going to go with, I like this one. It's Manu. I can't pronounce his last name, but in this movie, he was officer in water shouting P-40s. Also played in Voyager.
Oh, okay. Well, then we've done the important ones. Yeah. Well done. Good job, everybody.
P-40s!
Let's get to the Twitter post where we sum it up in 140 characters. Or 280. Sorry, it's 2018. What are we doing here? Sum this thing up in 280 characters or less. Let's begin with Randy Jordan.
Pearl Harbor, because I get to tweet first. I get to be the first of the three of us to say it bombed.
Nice. Well done. Hurry up and write your new ones, guys. Next up, Brian Dunaway.
Pearl Harbor, like Batman doing Batman shit in a World War II fighter plane. It's bullshit, but it's very, very good bullshit.
Yeah. There you go.
I took it. Rewrite.
Yeah, rewrite.
Fine.
I know. The person you did not expect to steal mine stole mine.
I forget completely that there was any Batman in his life. I've just completely forgotten about it. So when you guys say, "Oh yeah, Ben Affleck and Batman," I go, "Oh right, I forgot."
I would like to get ahead of Ibbot's tweet right now and admit I have not seen a single of the new crop of DC movies. Like
really?
The last DC movie I saw, that came out in a theater was Superman Returns.
Brandon Routh.
Wonder Woman, you got to see.
Yeah, Brandon Routh was my last DC movie. Of course, I saw Wonder Woman.
Okay.
I don't think it counts.
It does. Okay. It's a DC movie.
It counts twice.
Yeah, that movie's awesome. That movie counts. I see what you're saying, but that movie should count more for the reasons you're saying it shouldn't count, which is that it's actually good.
Right, yeah. Exactly. DC says, oh no, that counts. That counts.
Yeah, that's please. One of ours. In fact, it's everything. Don't say that. Yeah.
People keep telling me I'm supposed to watch Batman, Superman. I'm supposed to watch Justice League. I'm supposed to watch
The people who tell you to watch Batman v Superman hate you.
Yeah, they don't like you.
So those are not your real friends.
Yeah, don't listen
I never
to them.
Saw Man of Steel. I never saw the Young Punks. What are they called?
Suicide Squad.
Young Punks.
I like Suicide Squad. I think it's okay.
I like it.
I thought it was
poor
really
editing
bad.
Though. You might not like the editing, but everything else I thought was just fine.
That movie kind of sucks. All right. We should film something.
There, we bought Ibbot 2 more minutes. Yeah. Go.
Thanks. I didn't rewrite. Pearl Harbor. That's some real bullshit, Michael Bay. But it's some very, very Michael Bay bullshit.
There you go. So you
totally different.
You and Dunaway were totally different from each other. It turns out. Only barely is what I mean.
I can't believe you stole my girlfriend. You thought I was dead. I'm back.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that never happened. How about them apples?
Never happened. Oh, look at this. Alternate titles just handed to me. Terrible Side Story as the first option they went with, and they decided to change it to Cool Action Scenes with a Terrible Side Story. I made it a little longer there. Hey, emails. We get them here on the show, filmsack@gmail.com. We got one here from Dan who wrote in, says, hey, Sackers, just want to let you know that The Number 23 is now on Amazon Prime. It may not be there for long, but if you need something horror-themed for October, the film is bad in all the right ways for FilmSack. Thanks, Dan. Now, is this the Jim Carrey deal?
Jim Carrey. Yeah.
And I never saw that. Is it? Has anyone here seen this?
I've seen it.
Yeah? Is it terrible? I just heard it was bad is what I heard.
It is bad. I mean, it's very sackable. It's not, it feels like it's, I mean, it is as far from a Jim Carrey film as you can get with a film featuring Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
I did see this.
It's the one where he looks like somebody just drove by and splashed chocolate sauce all over his face.
Right.
On the cover. It's all like, I don't know if that's
the one
blood.
That feels like this is what Jim Carrey's life is like now.
Yeah.
And not what Jim Carrey's life was like at the time he did this film.
Ah, gotcha.
Hey, there's a couple of Jim. There are Jim Carrey movies. There are multiple. there are multiple Jim Carrey movies that aren't Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
This is not the only one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Yeah. And
Truman Show.
Truman Show's great. I love Truman Show. I loved Man in the Moon.
But it feels like there's a certain set of, there's a little bit of fun and even the you know, stuff like Truman Show and,
And, you know, and we watched it for FilmSack. I'm talking about choosing to watch something for FilmSack. We would never watch The Mask. That's just not going to be something we want to unpack.
Yeah, I don't
want to
see The Mask.
Right?
I don't want to see The Mask because I didn't like The Mask.
Are you sure?
I don't want to see it, but I feel
like how about the second one with Jamie Kennedy?
No. Oh, gosh, but like, no.
Oh, but that is the one we need to FilmSack
no.
if we're going to FilmSack one of those.
Oh, Lord, help us all.
To do a comparison, if we were going to watch a Will Ferrell movie, it would be Stranger Than Fiction, right? The other Will Ferrell movies are farce, right?
Yeah, but yes. What? You're right. You're right. I think that's true.
Yeah, we would never watch Ricky Bobby or
Anchorman
for FilmSack. Correct.
Yeah, I agree. Yes. I think you're right about that. It would probably
be that. Actually for FilmSack, we would watch the one that he did totally in Spanish.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. It's so bad, guys. It is so bad.
Yeah.
I watched that movie.
Yeah. Come on.
I should say, I read that movie.
Yeah, there's nothing to nothing to capture. I can't get any clips out of it. It's all, I mean.
Oh, really?
I could for Spanish people, but I don't know. I don't speak Spanish, so I don't know I would
capture.
What
have you got? Why can't we ever have a multilingual episode of FilmSack?
Well, we have two dumb of hosts. They only know one language.
And for those of you who don't know,
touché.
Will Ferrell. In 2012, Will Ferrell made a comedy called Casa de mi Padre, which is entirely in Spanish. It's a comedy western entirely in Spanish, starring him and Gael Garcia Bernal.
Yeah.
It is so freaking bad.
Is that House of My Father? Is that what that is in Spanish?
Yes.
Okay. And interesting. Yeah, I saw
House
that
of
night.
The Flags of My Father.
Right. I remember seeing that. Going, I don't think this is something I'll ever see. But there, what's the one where he had a yard sale or something that's more recent?
Yeah, that's Everything Must Go.
Yeah, I hear that's
it's good.
Interesting. Yeah, it might be a fun one.
It's not film sackable for sure.
Oh, you don't.
How about Land of the Lost? While it is a comedy and farcical,
it's an adventure comedy. We could do that. Yeah.
It's just enough adventure that we could.
Yeah, we could do that. If we're going to do the Golden Child and garbage like that, then that movie counts. Right. That's fine. Land of the Lost, freaking, you know, anything where people are running around chased by CGI things, I think we can do those. I think that's fair. Even if it's comedy as well, I think that's fine. But when it's just like straight comedy farce, like Ace Ventura or The Mask or something, freaking F that. Not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there you go. Your email there, Dan. We'll consider The Number 23 as we move forward into the holiday area. Although I think we've kind of got it figured out what we're going to watch. In fact, next week we're going to watch Van Helsing with Logan there.
I loved when Sammy Hagar took over.
All right.
Wait till Ben Affleck finds out what Kate Beckinsale does this week.
Oh, that 5150 album had its moments. It was all right.
it really did. And they, you know, they just got better.
Yeah, they really did. Until they got the Cabo Wabo or whatever the hell that was.
Until they got Gary Cherone.
Gary Cherone joined Van Helsing. It was a bad day.
Yeah. Gary Cherone, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah. So this is happening. This is, of course, Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale's back. This is kind of as a result of all her Underworld movies, made her perfect for this role, I think. And anyway, it's there's a full on Frankenstein monster in this, and it's very Universal Pictures sort of goofball, weird, and adventure-y. And so we'll see it. I remember seeing the theaters and thinking it was not very good, but
it's the League of Unextraordinary Gentlemen.
There you go.
Oh, which I want to see again.
Nailed
Keep
it.
An eye out for Hagrid in this movie. We'll see you for Van Helsing.
Yeah, Van Helsing to me is fancy hat, fancy pistols. That's all I think of when I when someone says that weird like canopy looking hat with a point on top, and then couple of fancy manually
gargoyles reloaded. Or something flying down. Boy, yeah, I don't remember much of this film.
I do. I saw it. I watched about 3 weeks ago, and it was beautiful.
I remember it being very blue, like lots of, and I don't mean like.
That was the time.
I don't mean dirty humor. I just mean blue filters on everything. Like,
yeah, it's, you remember correctly.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get into it. That's next week as we begin our descent into Halloweenness. That one's a light touch of Halloween, and then we get into some deeper, darker stuff after that. So stick around. There's more Film Sack to come. And thank you all for your patience over the last couple of weeks. We had some travel days and an emergency funeral day, and it jacked us up. In fact, I would like to just put the blame on me, because both of those instances were my fault. So, or not my fault,
well,
but happened
I had
to
a
me.
Thing, though. I think I had a beer fest or something in there somewhere.
We didn't cry when you called it off. Let's
oh, I know
it
what it
way.
Was.
We
had,
had
you
things.
Had beer fest, but we were going to start early, but then the funeral happened, and then you didn't. You just went to beer fest and got drunk.
It seems
with
like
us.
Brian Dunaway had a hurricane or something.
Yeah, there was that. That probably helped.
We did the show during the hurricane. What are you talking
that's
about?
True. Oh,
that's true. Yeah.
That's crazy aftermath. To think. The last couple of 3 weeks have been multiple trips, multiple natural disasters, multiple deaths that have affected at least some of us. Like, it's just nuts. But we're back, and everything's fine, guys. We're back, and you can expect shows all the way up through the end of the month before BlizzCon swallows us whole. That's going to do it. Filmsack.com is the website, and you can go there and hang out and do stuff and find things. That's all right there, filmsack.com. And also you can send us emails and voicemails if you want, filmsack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @filmsack, and you can leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. I should mention also, if you're a Spotify user and you have long wished that your music and your podcast were all together in one place, I have good news for you. FilmSack is now not only searchable and addable, but there on Spotify. So go
Spotify's all over the podcasts now, apparently.
Yeah, as of this week. You have to submit your shows, but once you do, they're in. And that used to be they weren't, but now they are.
Yeah.
So go check it out if you are into such things. Of course, still available everywhere else you get the show. And as always, 100% free. All right, that's going to do it for us, for Brian, and for Randy.
Sounds like World War II just started.
We'll see you next time. Bye now.
Track 57!
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
You trained us well.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.